Welcome to this Wednesday's Main Street here on Prairie Public. Glad that you are with us. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, two different perspectives about St. Patrick's Day. Prairie Plates visits the Blarney Stone at Fargo's Hotel Donaldson, and St. Patrick's Day celebrations are ramping up, so safety efforts are too. That's ahead on Main Street after we visit Watford City. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and Watford City sits at the center of North Dakota's oil country, a community that experienced one of the fastest growth periods in the state during the Bakken boom. That growth brought opportunity, but also enormous challenges. Housing shortages, infrastructure demands, childcare needs, and the question many boom towns eventually face, how to turn rapid growth into long-term stability. Watford City Mayor Phil Riley has had a front row seat to that transformation before becoming mayor. He was already deeply involved in the community through business and local leadership, helping guide the city through these dramatic years. Today, we visit with Mayor Riley about his path into public service and about the successes and challenges facing Watford City today. Mayor, welcome to Main Street.
Well, thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
We are glad that you are with us. And before we talk about Watford City, tell us more about your own story. What led you to get involved in local government?
Watford City is my hometown. I was born and raised in Watford City. One of the first sets of twins, I think, in the 70s that were born in our hospital here. My father was a telephone man in Watford City for 40-some years, and my mother worked in law enforcement and retail. So Watford City's kind of always been a hometown. I did move away for a little while where I went to college and met my lovely wife from South Central North Dakota, and she always kind of wanted to come back to Watford City, and I always kind of giggled at the time. I'm like, Watford City's a wonderful town, but at the time, much like the rest of Western North Dakota, we were suffering out migration, and I'm like, there's nothing that's ever going to get us back there until the oil hit. And realistically, we moved back to Watford City in 1999, and I always knew I wanted to help Watford City be the town I remembered. My father was active, and my mother was active in committees and different boards. My father was on the school board, I knew my dad once told me that you give back to the community that's given to you, and that's going to help drive me through, whether it was my 20 years on the fire department, my 10 years on the ambulance, or now running for my third term as mayor of Watford City.
You first started in local government with the city council. What prompted you to do that, Mayor, and then you became council president?
Yep. You know, I always knew I wanted to do something. It actually really wasn't until I had kids. I decided that Watford City is a great place to live, and I would love, if my kids would like to, I'd love my kids to move back, and I wanted to make sure that this was a comfortable and safe community for those kids to move back to. And just talking with a couple friends, there was actually three openings for city council that year, and myself and two of my friends were visiting about it one day, and we all three decided to run, which worked out really well. We didn't have anybody run against us. It's the easiest way to win when you're not being challenged. So all three of us, Watford City locals, born and raised in Watford City, all three of us got to join the council at the same time. And it was kind of nice to have someone you're comfortable with that you can behind the scene ask the silly questions like, was I supposed to second that? Or, you know, because when you're not used to city politics, it can be a little bit intimidating to begin with.
You stepped in as interim mayor when then-mayor Brent Sanford left to become North Dakota's lieutenant governor. And in June of 2018, you were elected mayor of Watford City in a vote that was extremely close. Take me back to that moment when you knew that you were becoming an elected mayor.
Yeah, it was, I'd like to tell you for sure, is between 3 and 6 votes were the only difference that separated us. And the funny story is I was asked by one time what the difference is between myself and my primary running mate. And I told him about 1 block and 3 inches. And the guy giggled and I'm like, nope, he lives a block away, 3 inches taller. But we went to the same church. We went to the same high school. We played football together, you know, but it was very interesting. So when the first batch of votes came in, I had a commanding lead, and I was getting phone calls. And then when the second batch of votes came in, it was dramatically closer. And my neighbor had just walked into my backyard and was telling me that he had been out of town all day and didn't get an opportunity to vote. And I'm like, well, have you seen how close it is? So we actually had, to wait for the next morning. It was very, very interesting. I think about that quite a bit because I talked to the guy Ranigan from time to time. I think about that quite a bit and wondered how things would have been different, because if I would have lost that primary, that first election, you know, I wouldn't have ran for my second and I wouldn't have been considering my third.
Watford City, of course, then became almost a symbol of the Bakken oil boom. Rapid growth, new businesses, and thousands of people moving into the region. Looking back, what do you think the community did especially well during those first years of the Bakken boom?
So we actually had like a 487% population growth from 1,700 folks to 8,500 folks. And one thing we did, we worked really closely with state and local governments, not just our local county commission to help us out, but Mr. Sanford, who ended up becoming lieutenant governor, and then Kurt Moen would sat in Governor Dalrymple's office, and they worked hard to get energy impact dollars and get the ability for us to actually bond against our gross production tax, which for those of you that aren't familiar, gross production tax is a property tax that we get off of oil wells, oil sites. Any around the state, property tax is based on property value, but if that value earns a profit, so crop ground has a different property tax, things like that. If we would have put standard property taxes to our oil sites, we probably wouldn't have much for oil. It would have been extravagant. So what we did is we do a gross production tax. And at that time, we were capped. Watford City, Western McKenzie County was capped at so many dollars per person in the community. And at that point, we would have been capped at about $1.3 million. There's no way we would have been able to pay for the expansion. We had a choice to make. It was grow or it was become a ghost town. And the people that were here before me made an excellent choice to grow Watford City. That's where we went from 1,700 to 8,000. I'm happy they did it. It did have its growing pains. But in the early years, it was really just talking to the people in state politics, state government, and helping them realize what they could do to help us. As we were all learning at the same time, and an expansion that rapid was nothing that we had ever felt before.
Mary, I want to hop into housing, if we could. Affordability and supply in Watford City. It's often described as the rooftops that drive everything else. Retail, school, stability, workforce. Tell me about the present state of the housing crunch in Watford City. Where is it most acute? Is it entry-level ownership? Is it rentals? Is it something different?
The answer to that is yes. We don't have enough housing across all aspects. We don't have enough entry-level homes. We don't have enough mid-level, or what some people would call their second homes. There's also an aspect that some people call them retirement homes, which we don't have enough of. Our rental properties are usually at about 80 to 85% occupancy. We've done what we can, and we're learning new ways to assist the local contractors in our area to put up more rooftops. Our school system has always continued to expand. This year, again, we had a 10% increase in our school enrollment. We, even during COVID, when we saw some communities see a negative in their school enrollment, we still had a gain. So Watford City has not lost school enrollment since the Bakken hit. And with that, we need to find new and inventive ways to keep people in our community. We don't want the single guy. Maybe back in the beginning of this, we would have taken anybody that wanted to come. But right now, we'd rather have a husband and wife and their kids and someone that's going to move to Watford City and stay in Watford City. That's the best way to grow a standard, safe community that has local investment made into it, is to bring those kind of families here. I think we've done a good job providing a safe, quality town for people to move to. What we need is housing and rooftops. It doesn't matter Watford City to Fargo. You're always going to have a challenge because the cost has gotten so high.
Mayor, I want to ask you about two programs that I'm aware of, Watford City's Pathway to Purchase Pilot, and then also McKenzie County's launching their expanded a down payment assistance program. Tell me about each and whether they're being effective dealing with the housing shortage.
So they kind of work together, and they have been extremely beneficial. We'll start out with the down payment assistance. That's something that the city and worked closely with the county to work on. And the Pathway to Purchase is also a program that the city and the county work together on. We pulled in peers in our areas and asked the different contractors what it would take to build a comfortable 3-bed, 2-bath home with an attached garage. It doesn't have to be anything fancy, ranch style, maybe a couple steps at the most getting into it. Very inexpensive. And the problem we have in Western North Dakota is getting things here is quite costly. So we found out what the total cost is. We wanted to make sure that was under the housing and finance, wanted to make sure that's under their magic bubble where people can still get loans to buy a home. And so we found out we had to do a little down payment assistance. The second area we did was our Pathway to Purchase, which essentially what it does, a lot of people don't have a down payment for a $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 home. I didn't, you know. Of course, I bought my home in 2002 and I paid just over $42,000 for it. But that's nowadays, to purchase a home, you have to have a sizable down payment. So our Pathway to Purchase program would take a home. You would essentially sign a title for deed or a long time lease, and you would pay rent. And what the plan is when that rent equals the down payment, that all that money you paid in would be converted. It would become your down payment. And then we would transition you over into the purchase sector. You'd get your own mortgage and it would be off the books essentially of Watford City. Unfortunately, we did have 9 homes in that program, but they sold. We were still infants in that program, and we weren't ready for our 9 homes to sell as fast as they did. So we're looking to start the program over again.
My guest is Phil Riley. He's the mayor of Watford City, native to the community. He's a local government leader who rose through the Watford City Council and then became mayor, first serving an interim role after Brent Sanford left for statewide office. Mayor, I would like to visit with you about childcare. It seems to me that McKenzie County and Watford City became really a national example for treating childcare like public infrastructure. County, city, the school district all helped build an employee housing complex and an adjoining childcare center. And leaders talk about daycare the way that, I guess, other communities talk about road and schools. Tell me more about why that's been so important and describe the program for our listeners.
Yep, absolutely. So in-home daycares are becoming a thing of the past. And the reason is you're finding more two-home income where both parents are in the workforce in a professional area. And honestly, there's not a lot of money to be made. And thirdly, you have to be a very special person to put up with my kids, much less somebody else's. There's not a lot of upsides to doing in-home daycare. Those people that do it, God bless them. I can't speak highly enough of them. They do have to have inspections to be certified through the state. So I'm more than happy when people do it. What we found was we went from a community of 1,700 people to a community of 8,000. We didn't have the daycare. Without the daycare, the moms are, I shouldn't say the moms, but one of the parents is staying home and raising the children. We needed those individuals in the workforce, and some people wanted to be in the workforce, but we did not have the daycare for it. So contrary, I never believe that city government should ever go into business against the local area. But we didn't have the daycare. So what we did is we teamed up with the school and we teamed up with the county and we built what we named Wolf Pup. With the Wolf Pup Daycare, which I refer to as an institutional daycare, unlike your home daycares. When your home daycare mom takes a week of vacation, you also take a week of vacation. We don't have that here. It's 5 day a week. I think it's 10 hours a day that it's open. It's to help serve the general public. The first one went so well that we had an extensive waiting list. We actually had to build a second daycare system. So now we have two daycares. They're relatively close to both grade schools. And we actually have openings, which is not something we've seen in a long time. That took a lot of convincing to the general public, because a lot of people just had a hard time seeing the need. But you mentioned how we like to consider daycare as infrastructure. And the funny thing is, your roads don't get built, your oil doesn't get pumped, your garbage doesn't get picked up, your cops don't go to work, and your nurses don't show up at the hospital. You know, it's every aspect that we consider a need in our lives today. If that family doesn't have childcare, that individual may not be able to be in the workforce. So we consider those essential employees, essentially. With the housing side, we also had a shorting on the housing side for police department, city employees, hospital, you know, that sort of thing. So when we built our daycare, we also built some housing to go along with it, that if you were, quote unquote, an essential employee, you could apply for some housing assistance, or I guess what it was a decreased rent. So we kind of had to do that all at the same time. And we had to earmark certain amount of units for essential employees, because we had to have a place for teachers to live. We just didn't have enough housing. Again, you're not going to get the family here if you can't get their kids in school, whether it be in daycare, preschool, high school, it doesn't matter. If you don't have a place for those kids to expand their education, they're not going to come here. So it was a lot of growing pains that Brent Sanford, the guy before me, and Kurt Moen, our city administrator, they really worked through hand in hand with, at that time, our current city council. When I was just coming on, those guys were, it was an amazing group of people that made extremely difficult choices, and I believe they made the right choices. So, and now here we are, we're kind of a beacon in Western North Dakota. We're not considered a hub city. That's a designation for populations over 12,500 people, but I believe we are a core community.
Mayor, I want to ask you about the announcement of Continental Resources in January of 2026 that they had planned to stop drilling in North Dakota for now. When you heard that, what was your immediate thought?
You know, my day job, I've been in the oil field since 1999. When Continental Resources decided to stop drilling, I guess, it was a bit of a surprise. You know, Harold Hamm has had a rig running in North Dakota for years, but also we understood that he was looking to do some offshore work. I shouldn't say, I'm not talking about deep sea, but other countries. Of course, when we lost those employees, it was too bad. You know, when a company pulls out of your community, when Continental decided to close their Watford City office and pull out, all but two employees, I believe, were able to keep positions elsewhere. But it's too bad when you lose a company like that. Continental has been a longstanding partner with not just North Dakota, but the Williston Basin, which covers, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, stretches down into the Powder River Basin into Wyoming.
Mayor, infrastructure demands are still an issue for your community. Your 2040 infrastructure planning work was framed around rapid growth and the need to fund renewal, replacement, and operations. And it specifically names revenue, sales, property tax, and utility fees as pillars. How is that working, and how do you keep basic services stable when oil revenues fluctuate?
Yeah, so we're very familiar with the fluctuating oil revenue. That's what you'll hear me refer to it as our gross production tax. That's the money we get from every barrel of oil produced. We've actually partnered with the county. The county has been very instrumental in helping us to work on that. We call it our CIP, Central Improvement Plan, our 2040 project. We're starting a 15-year project this year of replacing older infrastructure within Watford City. My house was built in 1942, so my lines are still clay tile. We're going to replace that with newer lines eventually. I'm not too sure where my street is on the list, but that's going to cost us roughly a minimum of $3 million a year. And with the county's assistance, their gross production tax, of course, is quite a bit larger than ours. They will help us with that because infrastructure is expensive. And the problem with infrastructure is people don't see it. They hear us talk about it. They see the money we spend on it, but it's not something they can hold in their hand because it's buried in the dirt. It's covered by asphalt. It is the asphalt. Sometimes people have a hard time realizing that when it rains, the water runs down that little hole in the curb and it's out of their life forever. But installing that style of infrastructure is very costly. It takes a lot of engineering because we all understand water doesn't run uphill.
You're opening bids tomorrow about over 7,000 linear feet, that is, of new water main projects. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, we're excited about it. It's something that I've wanted to do since I started in this office. Unfortunately, we had to continually expand the city to help fill the needs of the industry. But now that we're quote unquote settled in, which is never true when your community is based in oil industry, but when we're kind of settled in now, we've become a mature play. Term I don't care for, but it's a term they use. Now we can start working on things we probably should have looked at before, but now we have the time to help replace a lot of this existing infrastructure that some of it, you know, we're getting 80 years old. There's probably some of it that's 100 years old by now.
That's Watford City Mayor Phil Riley. He's joining us to talk about growth, challenges, and future of one of North Dakota's most dynamic communities. We're going to end our discussion with him today, but we have more to talk about with the mayor, and he'll be back with us Monday on Main Street. Mayor, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. I look forward to it.
Still ahead on this Wednesday's Main Street, St. Patrick's Day celebrations and St. Patrick's Day safety. Two perspectives of St. Patrick's Day right after this.
You're listening to Prairie Plates here on Main Street, served weekly. I'm Rick Eon. Today we have a guest in to talk about St. Patrick's Day festivities. It's a very festive time of year, and we thought we'd bring in somebody from the Blarney Stone at the Hotel Donaldson in downtown Fargo to talk about St. Patrick's Day festivities, activities, specials, food. We need to talk a lot about food today. So, Michael Engelbretson, welcome to Prairie Plates.
Thank you. Very glad to be here. Very exciting week for us. Biggest week of the year.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in the restaurant business.
Absolutely. So, I've been in the restaurant industry for 20 plus years. You know, started off serving and bartending. Been with the Blarney Stone business since we opened our West Fargo location about 12 years ago almost now, coming up in May. Worked there for a number of years, had an opportunity to move down to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to open our third location. Worked there for about another 5 years. And then when we purchased the Hotel Donaldson and decided to put a Blarney Stone in downtown, I had to be in on that one as well. So the three stores, 12 years. Worked my way up to the general manager position and love being in downtown, not moving again.
Well, congratulations on all levels.
Thank you.
And how many locations does the Blarney Stone have?
There's four total. First one's out in Bismarck. Second one was West Fargo. The third location, Sioux Falls. And then now downtown Fargo at the Hotel Donaldson.
That's really great. And tell us about the Blarney Stone.
Absolutely. Well, we're an Irish-themed pub. You know, we specialize in Irish dishes as well as a lot of different Irish tap beers, Irish-themed cocktails, other European dishes as well. We like to feature at times, but we can also just be a fun place to come out and hang out and have other activities and things on the weekend.
And what makes the Blarney Stone special, in your opinion? I'm sure you have a lot of opinions.
Absolutely. We just, you know, love to feature, you know, those Irish items and very much, you know, give everyone a chance to come out and be Irish for the weekend or virtually any time, I guess, but offer a variety of things that you probably can't get other places.
You're listening to Prairie Plates with Michael Engebretson with the Blarney Stone at the Hotel Donaldson, and we're talking about St. Patrick's Day festivities and food today. Well, let's get into the meat of it. What activities or festivities do you have planned for St. Patrick's Day? You mentioned earlier it was a four-day event.
Absolutely. So we're kicking things off this Saturday morning, the 14th. So downtown features a lovely St. Patrick's Day parade, been ongoing for many years. Parade starts at 11, so we are opening at 9 a.m. that day. So you can come out and get your spots by the window to check out the parade.
People watch.
People watch for sure.
It's important. And that parade is one of my favorite events. I live in downtown Fargo, and that's one of my favorite events in the year that downtown hosts.
Absolutely. It's you know, great fun at time for families and everyone to come out and enjoy and come out and, you know, watch the parade, have some great Irish food, and, you know, be a part of our downtown atmosphere.
You know, last week I tried the corned beef at the Blarney Stone. It's really, really good. It's made different than traditional corned beef, but I like the way you do it quite a bit because it's shredded a little bit and the flavor is just incredible. And I love the cabbage. That's a really good addition. That's a little twist on, you know, corned beef and cabbage. Talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So our corned beef is one of our main features for sure. The corned beef, we slow cook it, you know, 10 to 12 hours. We marinate it first before we cook it. We get big, huge slabs of corned beef in, and then we shred it. And so, like Rick said, it's a little looks a little bit different. It's not the shaved traditional corned beef, but it comes with a side of the horseradish Dijon and really ties it all together with that creamed cabbage. So it's a different spin on some traditional cabbage, but it's a creamed cabbage served with champ potatoes as well.
That horseradish sauce really makes it. It's delicious.
It definitely ties it all together. I love it. I eat it with almost everything we have.
Well, there are other Irish-themed dishes on your menu. Talk about a few of those.
Absolutely. So we have, you know, a few Irish-themed dishes like the Guinness Irish Stew. And it's got our Guinness gravy in it with potatoes and veggies and beef. We do a shepherd's pie. Our shepherd's pie also has ground beef in it. And we top our shepherd's pie with our champ potatoes, which is our mashed potatoes, and topped with cheese. So it's a little bit different spin on the shepherd's pie, but it is the best shepherd's pie. We also have our fish and chips is a great feature for us as well, that we beer batter our own fish as well.
I love how crispy that fish is.
Yes, it is definitely a fan favorite, especially this time of year. A lot of people come out, and you can get our waffle fries with the with our fish and chips. But we do our own beer batter, make it fresh a couple times a day.
And it is Lenten season, so fish fries are important to a lot of people.
It is, so definitely on Fridays.
Any menu items, and they don't have to be Irish-themed, but are there some menu items that you really enjoy, favorites?
Absolutely. So working at the Blarney Stone for as long as I have, we have such a huge variety of food that I eat something different nearly every day when I'm working. But one of my favorites, it's in the English theme, but it is in an English-style curry. So it's more of a sweet curry. You can get it in a variety of ways. You can get it vegetarian. You can get it with chicken. You can get it with shrimp. But it does come with served with our waffle fries again. And a big thing in England is curry and chips. So it's great to dip that waffle fries right in that curry sauce. Really ties it all together.
And you have a dip called Dublin dip as well.
We do. Dublin dip is our house-made creamy house dip. It goes well with, you know, definitely your fries. Some people even get it for their sandwiches and dip it right in there. You know, we do have a variety of burgers and things, burgers and sandwiches as well. You know, our Blarney dip is probably the favorite of most people or our most popular item. It's our version of a French dip, but we serve it with our rosemary onion gravy. Gives it a much different spin than the au jus.
Well, you're making me hungry. I think I know where I'm going for supper. Desserts. You have a lot of desserts to offer as well.
Yeah. So our probably most popular, again, is our traditional bread pudding. We have make our bread pudding in-house. We do deep fry it. We serve it with our vanilla bean ice cream topped with a little cinnamon. And then it has our Irish Jameson whiskey sauce. It's a caramel sauce dumped all over the top of it.
Bring in some samples next time.
Will do.
Well, let's get into the beverage end of things a little bit here. This time of year, are you featuring any special cocktails or beverages? I'm sure there are Irish beers on tap year-round, but are there some special items that you're offering right now?
Yeah. So, you know, we do feature some of our Irish beer, like Guinness. We do have a couple other house beers, Blarney Irish Ale, which is an English pale ale, and our Blarney Irish Red, which is a red ale as well. Great features for coming out and having on St. Patrick's weekend. Of course, because it's St. Patrick's Day, we have a couple of green beers as well. And on St. Patrick's Day, on Tuesday the 17th, we'll be giving away the first 100 pints of green beer to our first 100 guests on St. Patrick's Day, Tuesday the 17th.
Well, there are a lot of special things planned at the Blarney Stone here. We're talking with Michael Engerbretson of the Blarney Stone at the Hotel Donaldson in downtown Fargo. I'm wondering about entertainment. One of the other fun things about hanging out in downtown Fargo on St. Patrick's Day or St. Patrick's Day celebration weekend, which we're going to be doing this year, is the local bagpipe group. And do they stop in?
They do. They treat us very well. They usually come in on both the parade day on Saturday the 14th as well as Tuesday the 17th, the actual St. Patrick's Day. They, you know, kind of just wander around downtown, bop in when they can. They usually come in the afternoon, but they just come by and come in and feature in both rooms, get a little Irish, play those bagpipes. And so I don't have an exact time frame, but they're stopping by in the afternoon.
They always like to surprise folks, whether it's your place or Dempsey's or
absolutely
or Duffy's. It's just kind of one of those fun things that happens in downtown Fargo every year. Any other musical acts coming in or any special acts you want to talk about or let folks know about?
Yeah, people ask us about music very often. Currently, we don't have plans for this spring, but in the summertime, we do feature our Sky Prairie Rooftop. And last summer, we did do a few musical acts up there. So it's potential for doing some down the line here on the rooftop for Sky Prairie. But one thing that we do feature weekly is every Friday night, we do have our karaoke from 9 to close, 9 to midnight, with our local DJ Tommy Nachos.
And one of the things that makes the Blarney Stone at the Hotel Donaldson unique is the Hotel Donaldson is the tie-in there, because you also have affiliation with that, or your ownership group owns that.
Absolutely. So, yes, the ownership does own the hotel. It has a different manager, so I do manage the event spaces, the Blarney Stone and the Sky Prairie on my end. But it's a great place to have our location for downtown Fargo for our restaurant. You know, the history of the Hotel Donaldson, you know, it's been a staple of the downtown community since the late 1800s. And, you know, it's been a big part of downtown the last 25 years. As well. So it was a great place that once I knew my, you know, ownership had purchased the property, I definitely wanted to move back to Fargo and be a part of it. Just the excitement, the history, and to get a restaurant back in. So we've been open over 3 years now, but it's been great to come and be a part of this downtown community and embrace the history of the hotel as well.
Well, Michael, before we go here, is there anything else you want to let folks know about your St. Patrick's Day festivities at the Blarney Stone?
Yeah, thank you. So just a reminder that on Saturday morning, we will open early at 9 a.m. to get your spots for that parade route. And the festivities will continue all the way through Tuesday. And Tuesday, we are opening an hour early as well, so we will be open 10 a.m. on March 17th, Tuesday.
Well, Michael Engerbretson with the Blarney Stone at the Hotel Donaldson in downtown Fargo, thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here and love to come and chat with you, Rick.
This has been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Gion. We'll talk to you next week.
The Fargo-Moorhead Symphony presents Masterworks 4, The Seasons of Vivaldi and Piazzolla, March 14th and 15th. This all-strings program features concertmaster Sonia Bosca-Harrison in Vivaldi's Four Seasons and Piazzolla's Four Seasons of Buenos Aires. Details at fmsymphony.org.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. Central broadcast of Main Street, stay tuned for All Things Considered. Actor Delroy Lindo discusses his powerful new role as Delta Slim in the acclaimed film Sinners. Then tonight at 8 p.m. Central, it's Travel with Rick Steves. Irish tour guides share tips on how to fit right in when visiting Ireland. That's ahead tonight at 8 p.m. right here on Prairie Public. This is Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein. St. Patrick's Day celebrations are ramping up across the region this weekend with parades and plenty of green beer. To help keep impaired drivers off the road, North Dakota officials are rolling out a plan. We have the story in the latest episode of Prairie Beat.
Top of the morning to you. I'm Eric Deathery.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We're back again for another episode of Prairie Beat,
our weekly podcast on newsworthy topics running through the Prairie Public Newsroom. Danielle, you call this newsworthy? What's on the beat this week?
Well, we are coming up on mid-March already in 2026. That happens kind of quickly after we get through those first few years of January. But about this time of year, of course, we get a little more excited for spring and everything that comes with that, melting snow, warmer temperatures, being able to get out and about. And this weekend, there's a lot of celebrations, activities going on for St. Patrick's Day, and that's great. But St. Patrick's Day, of course, is one of those holidays where people celebrate a little more than usual.
You think? Irish car bombs, green beer, Guinness, and of course, you know, a little Bailey's Irish cream to top off the evening. All great flavors and fun to imbibe in on those pub crawls. Never makes for much fun the following morning, though. I wonder why. And that's assuming everyone gets home safely in the first place, and that's what we're talking about.
Precisely.
I'm Justin Bailey, and my title here is Safety Public Information Program Manager in the Highway Safety Division.
Justin Bailey is with the North Dakota Department of Transportation, or DOT, and a few years ago they started an initiative called Vision Zero. It's aimed at reducing the state's traffic fatalities all the way down to nothing.
I thought it meant because you can't really see anything because you're too blitz. Okay. Well, I know you guys have reported on that for years now at this point. One of the main things they talk about quite seriously is how preventable most of these deaths are.
Correct. So there are any number of things, of course, that can cause traffic accidents, like inclement weather where driving for conditions is important, or distracted driving, you know, driving while eating or doing your makeup or texting. Those are all risky behaviors and can lead to crashes. And with Vision Zero, DOT will partner with local law enforcement to do campaigns where they just put out extra patrols, for example, to focus on seatbelt violations. So they'll issue a lot of extra tickets. But it's supposed to get people more aware of buckling up. So I talked to Justin Bailey this week about impaired driving. That's been an issue in North Dakota for quite some time.
You know, over the past 5 years, we've had 167 people die in alcohol-related crashes. So, you know, it's not a small issue. Alcohol contributes to about one-third of all of the fatal crashes we see in the state each year. The saddest thing about these is they're 100% preventable.
Wow, that's, you know, no surprise. I mean, North Dakota tops a lot of drinking surveys and things like that. But that's truly an astonishing amount of people.
Yeah, I went back and I looked into some more longer term data, too. That figure was from the 5 year period between 2020 through 2024. And in the 5 year period from before that, 2016 through 2020, 222 people passed away in alcohol related crashes. So recent years, there has been some improvement.
Well, that's encouraging to hear. Sounds like some of those Vision Zero efforts may be paying off.
That could be. So obviously, in order to prevent alcohol related crashes, folks need to refrain from getting behind the wheel after they've had some drinks. And with the growing presence of rideshare programs like Uber and Lyft, it's never been easier or more convenient to make sure that you get a safe ride home. So one of the things DOT started doing 5 years ago was actually partnering with rideshare companies to offer an incentive. They'll do it during holidays where people like to drink a little more, like on New Year's Eve and, of course, St. Patrick's Day. It's called ND Sober Ride.
For the first time here for St. Patrick's Day, we're actually going to be including Uber in our offerings. And you know, normally we just run Lyft. And so the hope with Uber here is to just make it more available, especially for some of our smaller areas, just to give them that additional option to get a Silver ride home.
Yeah, that really makes sense. And, you know, Uber has just been kind of a game changer, and Lyft too, and all the rideshare companies, for being able to bring people safely home that would otherwise have to wait an hour for a standard taxi cab. So it's more instant, and I think it encourages more people to use those kind of services and get a ride home. So with so many communities across the state of different sizes and some services offered, some places and not others, speaking of that, right?
Yep, exactly. And honestly, the services themselves, they're a great option anyway. You know, you download the apps to your phone. It's convenient. Hopefully, no matter how many of those green beers you have, you should be able to open that up and summon a ride within a couple of minutes. But ND Sober Ride makes it an even better idea.
You can go to visionzero.nd.gov to access a QR code. And so you can scan that with your phone, and that provides you with a voucher that then gives you $10 off a ride through either Lyft or Uber. And, you know, that will open up in your Lyft or Uber app on your phone. And then you claim your voucher. And you can claim it before you go out for the weekend, before you go out for St. Patrick's Day. And it should be available when you need it.
You know, and depending on how close your home is from your local watering hole, I mean, that's 10 whole bucks. That may work out really to be a free ride.
I mean, maybe. I bet since a lot of people like to use those apps on nights like these, the prices are actually more expensive with surge pricing. Mm. So the fact that they are more expensive when people really want to use it might make it seem less attractive to use. But if you've got those 10 bucks off, it could possibly bring more people back to those apps and get them home safely.
Well, that does make a lot of sense for sure. And, you know, prices aside, it's really encouraging to hear about how in the last 10 years, fatalities and alcohol-related crashes have come down. But still, a third of all crashes in this state, period, is a lot of crashes, especially when, as we've been discussing, they are 100% preventable.
Something I found interesting in the Vision Zero reports over the years, the deaths have decreased, but the frequency of the crashes has remained pretty level. So in 2020, for example, one alcohol-related crash occurred every 14 hours, and that figure was the same as 2024. But in 2020, one alcohol-related crash death occurred on average every 9.5 days. In 2024, it had stretched out to about every 20 days. So the stats are really moving in the right direction that way, but as Justin Bailey puts it so well, these aren't just numbers.
You know, it's just making that better decision, you know, and putting the keys down when you've had a little bit too much to drink. So it definitely is a big deal. And, you know, each one of those lives that we've lost represents not just a number, but it's a family, it's a group of friends. And sometimes it's not even the driver that is the one that does pass away in those crashes, and they have to live with, you know, dealing with the guilt that they made that decision when they shouldn't have. And it's just a sad, sad deal.
Yeah, he really does make an important point there. And it's great that we do have these sorts of options with cabs and rideshare apps and even public transport in some towns, which I know isn't widely available everywhere in a state like North Dakota. So hopefully, no matter where you do live in the state, if you have plans to imbibe this weekend, you're making those plans to get home safely.
Those vouchers are going live this Friday, March 13th, and will be available through St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, or until they run out, so whichever comes first. So put a reminder in your phone if you want to remember to grab one of those for those bar crawls.
Well, also encouraging, much to the chagrin of bar owners, is that fewer people seem to be drinking these days, especially among
younger
Gen Z.
Yep, absolutely.
So that may have something to do with the declining deaths on the roads. Let's hope so anyway. Well, Danielle, what other stories have been making headlines in North Dakota this week?
We got a clipper-type system coming through on Thursday, giving chances of snow across probably mostly northern and eastern North Dakota. And then again on Saturday, could be maybe a stronger system with a few inches of snow.
Well, you might want to wear some green snow pants to your bar crawls, because we may have some more snow over the next few days.
They continued to make purchases, albeit a little more selective during the holiday season, a little less eating out.
North Dakota's economy fared okay last year, but taxable sales and purchases were a bit down. That does signal a slowing economy.
I feel very proud of exactly where we are right now, and I'm looking forward to my next phase, but I do it knowing that I've got solid people behind me that are going to pick up the mantle and take the department forward. So,
and we found out this morning that Fargo Police Chief Dave Zabolski has submitted his resignation. He is retiring after more than 40 years in law enforcement.
Wow, that certainly is a long time in law enforcement, Danielle. Certainly the last year of his tenure at the police department has been, let's just say, keeping him pretty busy. So I guess soon we will have a new chief in Fargo, and you in the newsroom will be on top of that as usual.
Absolutely. So be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news, or check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that's it for us this week here on Prairie Beat. Be careful out there with that green beer, etc. Get home safe, and I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
You can subscribe to our regional news podcast, Prairie Beat, wherever you like to get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Wednesday.
Dakota Pro Musica presents Music of American Faith, March 20th through the 22nd. The concert will premiere at the Assumption Abbey in Richardton on Friday, March 20th, St. George's Episcopal Church in Bismarck on Saturday, March 21st, and St. Mary's Catholic Church in Hague on Sunday, March 22nd. The concert will feature music written by American composers or music connected to American worship traditions. More information online at dakotapromusica.org or on their Facebook page.
This is Dakota Datebook for March 11th. In 1775, George Washington appointed Colonel Richard Gridley as his first chief engineer and gave him two assistants. Congress formally created the United States Army Corps of Engineers on this date in 1779. The Job Corps included several French officers and played an instrumental role in Revolutionary War battles, including the Battle of Bunker Hill, Battles of Saratoga, and the final victory at Siege of Yorktown. The Corps was confirmed as a permanent body in 1802. It is unique among military units because it undertakes both military and civilian projects. During the 19th century, engineers built lighthouses and strengthened coastal defenses. They surveyed the American West. Pierre Charles L'Enfant, a member of the Corps, designed Washington, D.C. Engineers were responsible for constructing landmarks familiar to us today, including the Washington Monument, the Library of Congress, and the United States Capitol. In 1824, Congress gave the Corps responsibility for maintaining navigation on the nation's major rivers, including the Missouri River. The Corps worked on numerous projects in North Dakota. The most controversial was construction of the Garrison Dam. Completed in 1953, the project displaced the three affiliated tribes and disrupted their economy. With 90% of the population relocated, the impact of the dam is still felt today. The Corps focused on flood control and gave little attention to the people whose lives were upended. Even today, the Corps struggles to acknowledge the trauma the dam inflicted on indigenous communities. The agency maintains an online site about the dam, highlighting flood control and recreational opportunities. It notes how the Lewis and Clark expedition opened the West, but it does not fully address the displacement of people who had lived on that land long before Lewis and Clark arrived. Residents across North Dakota have benefited from the Corps' efforts to manage flood protection and water infrastructure. Lake Ashtabula, Om Lake, and the Souris River Project combine flood risk management with recreation. Following the 2023 spring flooding, the Corps repaired levees in the Grand Forks area. Upcoming projects include work on the Garrison Dam, improvements to Pipestem Lake, and the monitoring of northern boundary waters. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
And that wraps up this Wednesday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, in a closer look with the Monitor, reporter Jacob Orlidge examines two developments with statewide implications, a North Dakota Supreme Court ruling on oil royalties that could spark new litigation, and the state's proposed Rough Rider coin, a Bank of North Dakota stable coin, raising questions about risk and regulation. And on Tech with Peck, as Apple celebrates its 50th anniversary, we'll take a look back at the rise and evolution of the personal computer. That's ahead tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.